In June, author and pie maker Beth Howard set out on an around-the-world journey. She traveled more than 30,000 miles, visited 9 countries, and made 211 pies. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, Beth Howard will be here, and we'll talk about her World Peace Tour. She visited New Zealand, Australia, Thailand, Switzerland, and even Syria. We'll find out what she learned along the way. Then later in the hour, Alyssa Jo Varner was a University of Iowa student in 2006 when a tornado hit town. That experience inspired her to create a comic book series called Blown Away. I'll talk with her. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've been following the journey of Beth Howard ever since she moved into the American Gothic House in Eldon, Iowa, and published her first memoir, Making Peace, back in 2010. She no longer lives in the American Gothic House, and now she has just returned to Iowa from an around-the-world tour, and she is here with us today. Beth, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me back, Charity.
And the second time I interviewed you, back in 2010, you told me that you were planning to take an around-the-world trip. And, of course, we talked before you left for that trip in May. So remind us, what was your vision of this journey? What were you hoping for?
I wrote my book, Making Peace, back in 2012. And I thought, wouldn't that be cool to do World Peace as a follow-up and take what I've been doing already, which is teaching pie classes to people and seeing how that builds confidence and gets people past their fears, not just of pie dough, but other things, and builds community. And I thought that would be cool to do that in every country around the world. Well, maybe not every country, but I also had this dream since I was a child to go around the world consecutively. And my husband, Marcus, as you know, he passed away 6 years ago, and he left behind 400,000 frequent flyer miles. And I always thought, well, I could use those miles to do a round-the-world trip because they offer an actual ticket for, I guess it was 180,000 miles, frequent flyer miles. You can do a consecutive trip. And the miles were expiring. And yes, I did tell you about this idea several years ago. And I thought, well, now I'm accountable because I've put it out there to the public. I'm sick of talking about it. I should just do it. And I was afraid. You know, I teach people to get past their own fears. And here I was really quite terrified to get out there in the world again. And it helped that I had this expiration date, so I had to either do it now or never and use those miles where they expire.
So, well, and I know that at one point after you published your first book, you traveled to Africa, to South Africa, and you taught a pie class there. So that was kind of a trial run for you. And it was an amazing, really emotional and powerful experience.
It was, because I didn't think these kids would even know what apple pie was or care about it. And I was completely wrong, and I was so taken by their enthusiasm and their attentiveness and all these hands reaching in the bowl to mix the dough, and they were hovering by the ovens waiting for the pies to finish, and they couldn't wait to take them home to their families. And so that was a really sort of telling thing for me. It kind of made me feel, well, if in South Africa they're excited about pie, then I'm pretty sure I could probably take that anywhere and recreate that. I also went to Tokyo, Japan, and did a similar thing with business people, and they weren't planning on making pie, but I'm like, okay, let's roll up the shirt sleeves and tuck your ties in. And the same experience. Everybody was laughing and talking, and even though no one spoke English in that Japanese class. So again, pie transcends cultural boundaries and languages, and that gave me the motivation to take this idea and go all the way around the world with it.
Now, after all of the pie classes that you have taught, and including the ones in Japan and South Africa, you have really been able to observe that there is something incredibly cathartic about starting out with this fairly simple goal, but it's so empowering to make the pie and to get this product at the end. What do you think people get out of that experience?
Well, there's that satisfaction of accomplishment. It's like edible art. Yeah, I made this. I created this with my own hands. It came together. I peeled the apples. I made the dough and rolled it. And people who have had experience making pie, they're always astounded that, oh, my pie never turns out. Thanks for showing me these tips. You know, so they're really satisfied in that way. But with people who have never made a pie before, and people in other countries particularly, it's a unique experience. And it's not just about the pie. It's about the community, that people are doing this in a group together, and they have something that they can share with others at the end, which is really, for me, the biggest part of the message. I made this myself. I'm sharing it with you. This is a sign of love and peace.
Now, the first couple of places you went on your journey, you started in New Zealand with one of your biggest fans, a wonderful woman that you connected with through your memoir. And then you went on to Australia. And following along on your Facebook page, A World Needs More Pie, I kind of got the impression that those first couple of stops were really exactly what you had planned for them to be. Just a really, you know, there was a lot of serendipity, but wonderful community building exercises. And you also got to bottle feed a baby kangaroo. So it's at that point, it sure looked like you were having the most amazing adventures.
Yeah, I hate to admit that. I think bottle feeding the baby kangaroo might have been the single most joyful, biggest highlight of my entire trip. But I'm like, no, it's supposed to be about the pie, right, and world peace. But, oh, I keep thinking about that baby kangaroo.
And then you went on to Thailand. And tell us a little bit about what you were doing there, because that was a very ambitious plan.
Right. Well, thanks to a friend of mine who volunteered me for the job, I recreated my pitchfork pie stand, which I ran out of the American Gothic House for 4 years. And I thought, oh, she has no idea how much work that is. But then I kind of grew warm to the idea, and I thought, all right, I'll do it. And it was for the American Embassy's 4th of July party. And I thought that was symbolic because the very last pie stand I held in the American Gothic House was on the 4th of July last year. So that I said yes, and the American Embassy said yes, and, you know, the whole series of emails back and forth. I had to be vetted and all that. And then I walked into the it was held at the Hyatt Regency, or Grand Hyatt Erawan in Bangkok. I walk into the ballroom where they're having this big thing. I thought it was for families, but no, it was for dignitaries, you know, this whole international, really, you know, business-like event. The theme was State Fair. So I said, well, I'll wear my overalls and my hair in braids because, well, it's the pie stand, it's State Fair. I walk in and the charge d'affaires says, oh, you must be the pie lady. So, but I made 75 pies for that event. And
along with pastry chefs.
Right.
So in the kitchen
I had help.
Of the Grand Hyatt.
Yes, I had help. And it took us 4 days and lots of translating and a lot of, you know, grams, pounds and cups to grams. And it was definitely that was probably also one of the highlights for me of the trip, that I worked with a team of pastry chefs, French-trained pastry chefs. So they're like telling their head chef, she's making the dough with her hands. They were just couldn't understand that. And it was bothering them that the blueberry filling was oozing out on the top of the pie crust. You know, to them, it looked very messy and they wouldn't be able to sell it at their fancy pastry shop at the hotel. And I said, no, that's how it's supposed to look. And then once the event happened and people were just going crazy for the blueberry pie because it looked so juicy and messy.
Right.
And they're like, oh, we get it. So that was really kind of a cute little cultural exchange to show them, no, this is something very different than you understand, but you wait and see. And sure enough, people would come from the far end of the ballroom. Oh, we heard about your pie. We came over to get some. And it was just so nice to be able to bring that kind of joy, especially to Americans who live abroad. You know, they don't get home that often and they get a little taste of home. So that made me feel good to make them feel good, of course.
Now, right after you left Thailand, there was actually violence very close to where you were in Thailand. Can you tell me what happened?
It was right at the spot. And I immediately got on the internet and was like, is everybody okay? You know, I had made a lot of friends there. I walked past that corner of the Erawan shrine. It's like a golden Hindu temple, and it's they bring marigold flowers and they bring offerings. And I walked past it every day. In fact, I even stopped and, you know, stood there and had a moment of quiet every day that I walked past. And it was a few weeks after I left, there was a bomb that went off there. People were killed, and it was just like, oh, it made my heart so sad. You know, I'm trying to spread world peace. Not that I could single-handedly right. save the world, but, you know, it hit pretty close to home, and it made me very aware of my safety or potential lack of safety, and which, you know, was one of the fears of going out into the world at this point in time. But
Yeah.
Well, and after such a warm, cozy experience that you'd had there, I mean, that must have been a shock to think, oh, the violence really hit close to home.
It hit very close, but I just kept feeling like I was very blessed and I made it through safely. And you know, I can't control everything that's happening, but I don't know. I guess if anything, it just the things that happened after I passed through, and there were other events besides that where there was unrest and violence, and I just all I could do is just be grateful for my own well-being. And you know, I'm trying to do the best I can to make the world a better place. I obviously can't do enough, and that was humbling also.
From Thailand, you went to places in the world where there were significantly more problems. You went to the Middle East, you went to Lebanon, and you actually made a day trip into a refugee camp in Syria.
Yes.
What made you want to go into a refugee camp in Syria? I mean, clearly it's a place where there's so much unrest and so much heartbreak right now.
Well, because Pi represents comfort to me. And you know that I went to Newtown, Connecticut after the shooting, and mm-hmm. those people were so grateful for this Pi, but they were American people and they knew what Pi was. And I went to the Syrian refugee camp and I thought, well, what can I do to help these people? I'll bring some Pi to spread comfort. But they didn't really understand what is this thing Pi. They don't speak English.
Right.
They called it galette, which is cake in French. Galette would be pie in French. Gâteau is cake. But, you know, they just didn't really know what I was doing there. They asked me if I was Angelina Jolie. So at least they had some idea of, you know, humanitarian
American
aid.
American people come. Right.
So I'm like, no, I'm not. But, yeah, it was an effort that I would say it wasn't really enough. I don't know what's enough. I don't know. It made me feel actually kind of bad that I go, there's how can I help? I don't know what I can do apart from, you know, inviting 20 families to come and live in my house in Iowa. I don't know.
Well, you left there. Did you feel helpless? Did you feel hopeless as you left?
I felt a little discouraged. Yeah. It's hard to talk about it. I'm still not really, really sure how to digest all of that. And especially because it's so much in the news right now. And I've had a little glimpse into it in real life. So when the media talks about the Bekaa Valley, I'm like, yeah, that's where I was. And
right.
I've seen the tents and I've seen how they live and I've seen the number of people there. And I don't know what to tell you. I still don't know. And that's as much of an answer as I can give you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Beth Howard. She is an author and a pie maker. She has just returned from an around-the-world journey that she called her World Peace Tour. That's P-I-E-C-E. And we will talk more after a break. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, Beth Howard is with me. She, of course, is an author and a pie maker. She wrote her first memoir, Making Peace, about coming to terms with losing her husband and finding her way through the world through pie. And she's also the author of Ms. American Pie, a cookbook. And she just got back from a world tour. This is something she's been planning for a very long time. She calls it her World Peace Tour. And Beth, after you left Syria, it sounds like you encountered a situation that was so desperate and so difficult that the kind of community, the kind of joy that you bring to people through pie wasn't received there and wasn't enough. You didn't feel like you had enough. As you left there and moved on to the rest of your tour, how did you feel?
Well, I got sick right after that, so I didn't feel very good. I went to Greece to look for the first ever recorded pie recipe, which was supposedly on a stone tablet, and I arrived in Athens and I got so sick, and one of my biggest concerns of my entire trip was, what if I get sick and I'm alone and I don't have anyone to help me? And that actually was a really unfortunate 5 days lost. But, you know, as one friend said, you know, that wasn't time lost. You've given so much. You need some time to rest and regroup. And I was alone, but I was staying at Airbnb. That was the one time that I did actually not have a host family. And the Airbnb hosts they treated me like family. So that ended up being an okay thing. It was a kind of good reminder, like, just have faith and trust that you'll always be okay. You know, you put good energy out there, good energy comes back. So that was a regrouping time. And then I went on to Europe from there. And Europe was one of the places I was actually kind of dreading. It was my longest leg for a full month, whereas I'd been everywhere else just about 10 days. And my husband was from Germany, and that's where I was headed, right into the fire, you know. And friends had said, hey, just be careful that you don't open up the old wounds of your grief. But a big part of my trip was, well, my late husband made my trip possible because of the frequent flyer miles, and I felt like I needed to honor him. But I was cautioned, hey, you know, you don't have to go and immerse yourself, go to the grave, go to the place where you got married. You don't have to do all that. So I didn't, in fact. So that was good advice I had along the way. And I did go to Germany. I went to the Black Forest, which is, in fact, where I got married. But I went to a different village and stayed in a cabin with some old friends that were mutual friends of my husband and mine. And that was one of the most magical parts of my entire trip.
What did you do? We picked
wild blueberries. It was like we called it blueberry boot camp because my friend's husband made us get up early every morning and get out there in the woods with our little buckets and bowls and foraging like little bears. And these are tiny little blueberries, but wild ones. But by God, we picked enough to make pie. So we picked blueberries. We made pie. We went hiking. We went swimming in a lake. We went on a little adventure through a creek, having to jump over boulders and dip in cold pools, and just laughed a lot. And they had kids ages 10 and 8 and 7. There were four little kids. And so I taught pie classes each day I was there to the girls. And
nice. And
we made lots of pie, peach and banana cream and, of course, the blueberry and the apple. So that turned into be this little fairy tale couple of days for me that turns what I thought was going to be something really difficult into something absolutely joyous.
You also reconnected with some of Marcus's, your husband's family, and you hadn't seen them for many years, right?
I hadn't seen them since his funeral 6 years ago. And I went to visit his cousins in Aachen, which is near Cologne, Dusseldorf area, on the Belgian border. And to break the ice, I taught a pie class. So that was really helpful. Again, you know, pie is this thing. You know, it wasn't maybe all about world peace. I think I got set straight in Lebanon that, okay, you're not going to change the world. Okay, but you could at least go and connect with people and bring people together. And that was a really good experience for me. And I have to say, if I hadn't had the pie to sort of ease us back together, I don't know how it would have gone. It felt a little bit awkward at first, but we made apple pie, lots of pie, and then we ate them. They were still steaming hot, but ice cream helps.
Yes.
So we ate lots of pie, and I was staying in a town that was, they had a bike trail nearby, like a railroad, an old railroad that was turned into a bike path. So I was actually there for the six-year anniversary of his death, which was August 19. And on that day, I borrowed a bicycle and went on a very long bike ride, 5 hours on this railroad trail. And it was a good day. It was, you know, again, taking something that could have been sad and turning it into something positive and something really serene and beautiful. And I think Marcus would have liked that.
You have worked through so much of your grief through pie and through writing. Does this feel like closure of a sort?
Absolutely. If I took away nothing else from this entire round the world trip, I feel like I moved through some portal. Like, I'm ready to move forward. I loved my husband, but he's gone and it's been 6 years. It's time to move forward. And I really feel like I've made space for that now.
I'm talking with Beth Howard. She is an author and a pie maker. She blogs at World Needs More Pie. And you can join our conversation if you have an email. You can send us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can call 866-780-9100. Now, Beth, along the way, you did share a lot of what was going on through your Facebook page, and you would post pictures and keep people up to date when you had internet access. You also, as part of your journey, not only were you teaching other people about pie, but you were seeking out information about pie. And Jeff sent this email, which gets to my very next question. He says, I'm wondering whether in her travels, Beth Howard learned any recipes or made any dishes that were indigenous to other countries. And I know that was a part of your journey. What did you learn to make?
Oh, I can't pronounce the names. Otherwise, I'd be happy to talk about it. I did make a couple of different things in India, but I mean, I was so overwhelmed. My host there, Deepa Krishnan, she was bombarding me with recipes and talking so fast. And I did make a couple of Indian things that went in. We made them in the toaster oven, but in Lebanon, I think that was kind of the one that I found remarkable. They call it a pie, but it was like a pizza crust, and all they put on top is herbs. So they have a mix of thyme and sumac and sesame seeds, and they call it za'atar, and a little layer of olive oil and just herbs. And, you know, I tried a couple different kinds of these pies, they call them, and that was my favorite. And all it was just this little herbal topping. So
Very simple and delicious.
Totally surprising. And it's a street food. It's a common street food in Lebanon.
Well, so often pie is a street food because, of course, it's self-contained.
Right. But one of the funniest pies was in Australia. And let's talk about comfort food overload. They have a little meat pie, which is what they're known for in both New Zealand and Australia. They like the savory ones. But it has a scoop of mashed potatoes and a scoop of mashed peas on top. And it's just so – it's overkill. But – hey, it's actually a kind of a common and well-known thing over there.
Well, I know you made samosas in India, or at least you ate some.
I did eat samosas in India. I didn't actually get to learn to make the samosas themselves, but I like I said, if I could pronounce the names, I have to go back into my files and really sort of find all the different recipes that I did learn. One friend said, you know, well, if you go to Bangkok, for example, they don't have ovens, so they're not going to have pie. Okay, yeah, good point. So, you know, not every country had their types of pie.
And for your purposes, what was your definition of pie? Because we've already talked about several different things that don't necessarily sound like pie by...
Well, crust. Anything with a sort of a crust. It's like a crust that sort of is a vehicle for transporting some other filling. It's pretty loose. In my opinion, the definition of pie can be loose. It's a metaphor.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
Remember?
Right. I remember. And it's not about perfection.
Right.
I remember. All right. So when you were sharing these things along the way, you were a long way from home. And clearly there were times when you felt very alone. What was it like to have people who had followed your journey and read your books and read your blog commenting and sending you messages about the things that you were doing along the way?
Right. That's a whole new world, because I traveled when I was back in my 20s and there was no internet back then. And I think back, you know, what would my life and what would my travels have been like back then had we had this kind of communication? You know, fast forward to 2015, it was so great to have all of that commentary and support and people cheering me on and people thanking me for, oh, I love your post. Thanks so much. It's, you know, I'm so happy to follow along. So that encouraged me tremendously. You know, that Facebook and also, you know, tools like Skype, I was able to talk with my parents and Skype with them and, hey, look where I'm staying. And I would walk around. I had the Skype app on my phone so I could walk around and show them the scenery. And that was really helpful also, because I definitely, it was hard for me to leave my parents.
Were you surprised by what posts got a lot of attention as you were traveling?
Oh, you mean the posts of my dog that was who stayed back here in Iowa? Yeah, You never know what people are going to like on Facebook. I'm always surprised. And, you know, here I am in these exotic places and, you know, trying to post meaningful things. I posted something from Budapest, Hungary about the Jewish quarter. And I like, nobody really paid that much attention to that page. But the next post was my dog back in Iowa running around on the farm. And, oh, your dog is so cute. You know, the more comments on the dog. So I always found that amusing, to say the least.
And your dog, Jack, did spend the time in Iowa. And what was that like for you to watch him? I know that you had lost your dog, Daisy, not long before you left. And so leaving Jack was especially difficult because the two of them had been companions for so long. So what was it like for you as you traveled around the world to, again, through the magic of 2015, watch your dog, Jack, have adventures on a farm in Iowa?
Well, we had stayed in the farm before, so I knew he was happy there, blissfully happy. In fact, I think he was really mad at me for leaving the farm when I left last year. And I put a spin on it, which was helpful. I called it summer camp. So Jack spent the summer at summer camp, and he was having a great time with my friend Doug. And Doug would send me regular texts and messages about him throwing the stick and taking Jack out of the kayak, and here's Jack in the creek. And so that was so helpful to see that he was having a great time. And I knew he was in good hands. I knew he was happy there, and I was getting regular updates. And I don't think I could have done the trip if I didn't know that my dog was in good hands. And, you know, I don't mean to sound dog crazy, but I don't have kids, and this dog is sort of like a kid to me, you know. Right. So I love him, and I have had so much loss in my life. I just couldn't bear to think of losing him too, and just knowing that he was in good hands helped me relax a lot. I had so much to focus on, you know, just getting from place to place on my trip, that just knowing that he was taken care of was great peace of mind.
The last time I talked to you, right before you left for your around the world trip, you weren't quite sure where you were going to be when you got back. You had moved out of the American Gothic house. You had lived for a while back with your family, which are they're now in Los Angeles. And you were kind of at a crossroads personally. Where are you now?
Iowa. That's why I'm here. Can you believe it? I moved out of the American Gothic house a year ago. I had to take a little time to sort of lick my wounds over that. I missed it. I mean, it was like a double-edged thing. I was really needing my privacy. I was really tired and a little bit burnt out on, you know, the public attention of living in a tourist attraction. Right. And making all that pie. And, you know, it's taken me a while to sort of let go because I really loved that house so much. And I went back to California for 6 months and I realized, no, I don't like it here anymore. I'm not meant to live in California anymore. Iowa changed me. You know, I really appreciate the quiet here and the people and the spirit of generosity. And I really, really missed it. And the fact that my dog was here was kind of like, well, I have to go back there anyway. And then once I got back, I actually knew before I finished my travels. When I went to that farm in Australia where I saw the baby kangaroo, and then I visited another farm in Switzerland. And each time I was at a farm, I was just really missing that lifestyle in Iowa. And so, yeah, here I am. I'm here, back here. I'm teaching pie classes again and settling in.
So if people are hoping to attend one of your pie classes, they're open again to the public?
I've got a couple on the schedule this fall. I'm trying not to overcommit because I do want to work on my next book. And,
right.
And my book will incorporate this round the world trip, but will also incorporate finding home again, you know, finding my way back to Iowa.
I think a lot of Iowans, I've talked to so many Iowans over the years who had the experience of growing up in Iowa or living here for a while and feeling far away from the world and wanting to go out and be a part of something that they saw as bigger. And then when they're out there realizing just how much they love home and that, you know, they actually want to be here again. It sounds like you had a very similar experience.
I would encourage everybody to travel. I think it's essential to understand the world and to understand how we're more alike than we are different. I think it's good to get out of your comfort zone. And I definitely think it makes you appreciate home all that much more, or not. You know, maybe you need to grow and learn and stretch and go away for a while. But for me, you know, at this age, I am so grateful to have a place that feels so grounding, and to have gone back to even forget the around the world trip, just even being in Los Angeles for 6 months this last year. I'm like, no, it really showed me the values of what's here in Iowa and what it offers. And I just, like I said, I do think it's important to get out, you know, get sort of the cultural stimulus, if you will, and really gain the appreciation for being where you are.
You also, when we talked last time, you were feeling kind of confined by pie, but it sounds like you've come back home to pie making as well.
I think I wrote you an email after listening to one of your shows, because I went and looked at it the other day. I'm like, that was such good advice. I said, if I'm not pie, who am I? And you said something like, I'm not worried about you. And I think I needed a break. You know, I really do think I had just a little too much public attention living in the American Gothic house. And with that came pressure, and people really expected pie. And it was making me feel hemmed in. You're right. Right. And I've had a nice break, and it's still such an important part of my life. But I just think I needed some breathing room and some rest. Not that traveling around the world was restful, but, you know, just to gain the appreciation, like I said, of where I am and still what pie can do.
Beth Howard, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And welcome home.
Thanks.
Author and pie maker Beth Howard. You can follow her online. Her website is theworldneedsmorepie.com. She also posts on Facebook. You can look up The World Needs More Pie, and we are all eagerly awaiting her next book about this world tour and so much more. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with a comic book artist who got her start growing up in Dubuque. That's coming up in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.